This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to a lovely warm Tuesday. I'm Kusa Chuang and I'm joined by Wong Xiaoning. 6 o'clock in the morning, bright and early, bushy-tailed as usual, Wong Xiaoning.
Yes, but not so warm. It's kind of like a bit of a wet day today, isn't it?
Yeah, warm to all British people and people who live in Alaska, but to us it's
cold. All relative,
it's
right?
It's all relative.
Yes, it is.
So early part of the week, not yet Friday, not yet Wednesday, but definitely not Monday. Yeah. Tuesday is one of those weird days, right?
It's kind of like the in-between of the week,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You're like starting to count down to the weekend.
Because you got Wednesday, which is hump day.
Yes.
Friday, which is obviously
a
day for jubilation.
Yes.
But then Tuesday, you don't know what to do with Tuesday. Tuesdays are like, oh gosh. You've just woken up, but you haven't had a shower yet. You know what I mean?
No. That's you, Kusa Chuang. I won't stand so close anymore then.
So in other words, you've got to make up some stuff, or actually we have to read some stuff from the real newspapers. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, on my mind this morning is, of course, COVID-19. I think it's on the minds of most people, unfortunately. And, it's the scare, I would say, or the debate has reached our shores.
I'm glad to say there's a debate because some people are just saying, oh, it's a flu, don't worry about it. And then some are like, it's the end of the world, at the end of times.
Well, yeah. I suppose we try to be as rational as possible based on the science and not let fear overtake us. But I would say it is scary. There's no denying it.
It's gathering momentum, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I talk about how you don't have to be a big team to make things happen on a big scale. Clearly. And of course, there's also another thing to do with one of my favorite products, toilet paper.
Mm.
So if you want to hear all that is about, stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Red Hot Chili Peppers, with a wordplay on something that comes to all of us naturally, Californication. I'm Chuang, joined by Wong Xiaoning. And of course, we are talking about some little interesting bits of news and trivia from around the world. And this item from the BBC, The Beeb to most of us. Hong Kong is seeing a shortage of toilet paper, Xiaoning, something which is unheard of, but it is.
Yeah, it's also the case in Singapore, right?
Yes, in Singapore, Hong Kong, apparently triads have been stealing toilet paper. An Apple Daily report said that 600 toilet paper rolls valued at about $220 have been stolen and stocks across the city are now at basically wartime levels. I don't get it. I don't get it. Why is toilet paper so valuable at a time of a virus?
I guess it's considered a necessity. And
use water, lah.
Well, for Asians, especially Malaysians, it's no big deal, right? We kind of know we can use water. But for a lot of other people who are not Malaysians or even Asians, I mean, well, honkies.
Are you talking
Hong
about
Kongers,
the Caucasians?
Yeah, the Caucasians. Maybe water is very alien. But I think it's down to just panic, right? Because, you know, it probably starts like you went to your local welcome supermarket, which is probably the equivalent of going to your Giant or Tesco's. And then you see a few people putting more rolls than normal into the shopping trolley. And then you start following. And before you know it, the whole town does it. And people start WhatsApping each other. Hey, no toilet paper, no toilet paper. And then it's like crazy, right?
Yeah. So I wonder what the rules are in terms of trying to profit from this, right? Because we've got various price control legislation. So in Malaysia, you've got NTPM, which is the Nibong Tawal paper machine.
Yeah, the listed,
manufacturers.
Yeah,
right?
They're the listed toilet roll manufacturers.
I'm sure they would do a roaring business in Hong Kong now. Malaysia, I was at Aeon last week. Lots of toilet paper still.
Yes.
Still. So we haven't panic bought toilet paper.
But actually, if you look at it in terms of the bigger picture, right, what does it say about society? Aside from the fact that somebody was, I would say, trying to be, you know, clever in the sense that, okay, let's steal something that people want now, right? Because obviously this panic has created, I would say, opportunistic thieves.
Wasn't there the banker in Singapore who like basically gave like sanitation packs to his clients?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Other times it would be champagne or whatever, or stadium football tickets.
He's very clever. He gave us the wet wipes, the mask, and then the hand sanitizers, Dettol, and suddenly it was like the best
the thing,
gift.
Right? Yeah.
The best gift. So yeah, there's always opportunity in any crisis. But I think what worries me is like this, despite government assurances, people just don't have faith. That's why they ran out and buy toilet paper. They went out and bought rice.
They went
out to buy instant noodles.
Have you bought anything?
No, actually, I haven't.
You haven't, really?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
I
tried to stay calm.
Yeah.
And I tell myself, look, you know, it is bad, okay, it is bad. There's no denying. There's like 70,000 people infected, and those are just the official numbers, right? Because there are lots of people get it, and to them, it's nothing more than just a common cold or like a flu. And the death rate now, what, 1,006 easily?
1,008 actually. Yeah,
okay. So, but the mortality rate is still, and depends on the study you want to believe, it varies from 1 to 2.5%, which isn't very much different from H1N1 or even any normal flu.
And much lower than MERS.
Yeah. So yeah. I tell myself, okay, relax. Let's not drive ourselves nuts. Keep calm and carry
keep
on.
Keep chugging on.
Yes. But it's a reflection of society that they don't have faith in the government to provide, right? And I think you see that in Hong Kong because, of course, Hong Kong has its own issues, right?
But what can the government do? The governments have not demonstrated a good example in historic terms of looking after you in times of crisis. A lot of people in China don't want to be quarantined because they think that the risk of infection is much higher.
Yeah.
And so many video accounts on Twitter that you get quarantined, you don't get access to hot water, sanitation, you got to walk miles to the toilet, right?
Yes.
And huge room, right? Huge room
for people.
I mean,
they were like they put them in departmental stores, they put them in stadiums.
Yeah.
I guess not equipped at all to house so many people.
It's not exactly the most comfortable place.
No, unfortunately it's not.
Yeah, so I don't know. It just, you remember there's a bit of a prepper movement some years ago in the US? People who prep for the apocalypse, preppers,
yes,
right?
Yes.
They would get their little cabins in the
forest. They would have a cellar.
They would have their nuts and their raisins and, you know, their weapons, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Their gold bars, because they believe that, you know, there's no value in a dollar, right?
So then I also did a bit of research on my own at that time. I ascertained that the most valuable commodity in times of crisis was cigarettes.
Is it?
Cigarettes, yeah.
So you have a stash somewhere as it goes to come?
No, because I think they go stale. So I thought to myself, if another time comes, I'll just go and buy a whole bunch of cigarettes. But because you can't trade gold bars, right? Because gold bars are too expensive, right?
Yeah.
But cigarettes, like 1-2 sticks, and then, you know, we swap things.
You are such a Penang Knight, finding opportunity in any crisis.
Well, tell us what you think. Are you prepping? Are you stocking up? Are you adopting a prepper mindset? The WhatsApp is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, MGMT with Electric Feel. Okay, Chuang Xiaoning, just in the very same vein as what we were discussing earlier with the virus. It's taken many interesting turns, and the British school in Malaysia, in KL actually, very, very near to where we are now, are starting to show some, signs of discomfort, I guess, with students from other countries, specifically China. So I think the British International School, BSKL, was apparently soon to welcome a whole bunch of North Anglia education students. In fact, I think they're here. And they're now unable to go back to their schools in China. And NAE schools are located in Beijing, Chengdu, Foshan, Gongqiao, Hong Kong, Nanjing, Nantong, Ningbao, Shanghai, Shenzhen, and Jiaxing. So a lot of small, even tier one, tier two cities in China, but they can't go back now. I presume they're still going to school. So the parents of the rich toffs are now a bit uncomfortable with their presence. What do you make of this?
I don't know whether from this article which came out in the Straits, New Straits Times, it does say that these students who are impacted, these students who originally came from China, they've already been in the country for more than 14 days, right? And which is beyond the 14-day recommended quarantine period. And apparently no one is exhibiting any symptoms of the virus. And apparently the school has also seen all their visa, exit and entry stamps, so knows how long they have been in the country. And they've also provided a doctor's note to say that, you know, these kids have a clean bill of health. And also that the parents and the families themselves of these affected children, they haven't been to Wuhan or the Hubei province. So I think the school has tried to tick all the boxes to show that these kids are fine. Nothing wrong with them. They haven't been near the epicenter of COVID-19. They've been in the country for longer than 14 days. So can we please let these kids start school again? And it's the Malaysian, I think it's the parents of the kids who are part of the Malaysian school, which are like saying, no, we don't want these kids, right?
Yeah, they're not comfortable.
Yeah.
So even though the school, it looks as if the school has done the right thing.
Yes, they've tried to tick all the boxes.
Yeah.
But I would say, I don't know, are these kids, are these parents overreacting?
Well, you get the sense that they do, but you also equally get the sense that in schools like this, where fees are the most important thing, and you get in based on the exclusivity and affordability, because not everybody can afford. The school, these kind of fees every year, something like 80,000 ringgit, okay, for one child. And this is primary school, yeah? Primary school. So there's a high level of exclusivity, and the parents have a lot of wealth and influence. If they don't like something, and if they make a sound, the school reacts, because obviously these are wealthy people who are paying fees. So you can imagine the principal would be caught between a rock and a hard place.
But isn't it exactly now when you need to be showing some form of compassion? I mean, aside from the fact that these kids, obviously this international school charges top dollar to, you know, for the fees, but it's just an act of compassion, right? Because these other children who are impacted, they can't go back to China at this current juncture. It's probably a good idea that they stay here. But at the same time, what do you want them to do? You want them to, I mean, one of the suggestions is homeschooling. But homeschooling for how long? I mean, are you going to treat these kids like as if they're marked on their forehead forever and ever? I mean, yeah. It doesn't seem fair also at the same time, right?
In education, how long is the virus going to go on for, right? Yeah. How long can you not go to school?
I mean, what, you're going to be stigmatized just because you came from China? Is that the only valid reason?
So the easiest thing to do in a situation like this is to put the parents in the opposite, put the shoe on the other side, right?
Yeah.
If you are the parent of the child, of your child who's overseas in a foreign country on an exchange program, and then you're caught on the wrong side of the coin, what do you do, right? How would you feel if the parents in, say, China, if the shoe was on the other foot, how would you react? Yeah, how would you feel?
It's not very different from the noises we are making where, you know, there was a story just not too long ago where this Malaysian student came back for Chinese New Year to KL, right? And then she went back to Perth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And she couldn't get into her house. Yeah. The landlord had chucked all her stuff outside. And on the basis that she was Chinese and hence must have been exposed to COVID-19. It's the kind of thing where, you know, we start taking assumptions and wrong assumptions, and we treat people badly just based on that.
Yeah.
On a fear.
Yeah. And, you know, I just get the sense because
It gets out of control at some point,
yes,
right?
Yes, and because I've seen enough movies, and therefore the movies are true, this is the first stage of societal disarray.
Yeah.
Okay, because this is the first level.
It's us against them, you know, you start drawing these invisible lines.
Yeah, but if you take it up another level, if the virus takes grip further, right, what happens to society then? Because it's not as if Malaysia society is very well regulated. We already trespass so many boundaries on a daily basis, whether it's overtaking or haphazard parking, or road rage or whatever. You imagine what society would be like if it just gets worse.
Scary thoughts, right? Yes.
Scary thoughts. Okay, again, tell us what you think. Your opinions matter. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Fleet Foxes with Ragged Wood. I'm Chuang, and Chowning is with me here in the studio on this lovely Tuesday morning. Not so warm, not so hazy, nice and cool, good for sleeping, but if you're awake, like us, have a listen to this next story that we're going to do. It's from Fast Company, and they're extolling the virtues of small teams. And as we know, small teams in organizations are nimble, they're fast, they're big picture, better communication, easier to manage, cheaper, right?
I think the key word here is cheaper.
Cheaper, yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of virtues to be had for small teams, right? Large organizations tend to get too full of people, and I've been
paralysis, right?
Analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
We've been in both sides. I mean, certainly I have. I've been in big. I used to be part of this PR. I mean, as a contractor, right? Huge global contracts, right? Big global clients, and so everybody gets involved. Advertising gets involved. PR gets involved. Digital gets involved. Meetings were 30 people big, right?
And then you had to report to local, and then you report to regional.
Yeah, yeah. It was
and
completely
then
the off
emails
the scale.
Just go round and round and round. Okay, aside from the meetings, I know what you're talking about, John. Because then you have the emails that just go nowhere.
I call it the copy lists.
Yeah, it's like there are more people CC'd than there are in the phone directory,
yeah,
you know. And
yeah,
then after a while, who makes the decision? What goes on, you know? And then the trail goes so long for the email, you forgot what the original issue yeah, was, right? And you have to scroll back all the way up, and it was like, huh, this is it. And then you look at all the email, down, 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 down. And you know what's bad about big teams? Everybody hides in the decision. Yeah. And because nobody wants to be accountable.
Yeah. And they don't want to be seen to be making the sticking the necks out.
Yeah. Whilst in a small team, you have no choice.
But here's my theory. I think that if an organization gets successful, it makes a bit of money, it starts to hire people, it's almost inevitable that teams get larger. Almost inevitable.
For sure.
Okay.
I mean,
it's very hard to stay small and nimble. Very hard.
Maybe the key then is to break it up into smaller teams, right? So you always have like a internal kind of mandate where you say, okay, if a team is larger than X number, you need to start looking at why do you need such a big team? Is that function getting too large also? You know what I mean? And then break that down again. But then you might end up having 20 small teams. That's the downside.
Yeah, and then you get the same issues again, right? So for example, if you have an organization of, say, 70 people, right? Hypothetically.
I wonder which these 70 people are you talking about?
And then you have like, let's just say five business divisions, right?
Yeah.
You know, of about seven people each. Is that too big? And certainly, can you basically not have bureaucracy ever?
No.
You can't, right?
No, as long as you have two people, there's bureaucracy, right?
That's right. That's
Isn't
right.
it? I mean,
so these are the management headaches. And some people will say that for such an organization, 70 is too big. Maybe it should be 40, 45, right?
I don't know whether it's fair to put a number, you know what I mean? As in like a definitive number. Because every business will have
more people who get paid less or fewer people who get paid more. I think that's the boss's decision, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And also depends on your team members, right? If your team members, honestly, this is the truth. They are very efficient, they are very committed.
If they're crack soldiers.
Yeah, you know, they work hard, they contribute, then you're lucky. You can have a very small team where everybody's paid better, assuming the budget is there.
Yeah.
But if you have, I would say, not very effective team members, then, you know, eventually you end up having, you know, a bigger team. And that's, or maybe you should actually just sack those people rather than allow the team to get bigger.
Yeah, so is the blame at the government's door in terms of having an education policy which delivers good people every year? Or is it the responsibility of the company owner to have a policy which says, okay, I'm only going to be this size, I'm only going to have these people, I'm only going to do these things, and I'm going to be very disciplined about it.
For me, I would say the motivator would be to tell your team lead, I mean the boss, this is the budget I'm willing to spend on your team. This is the result I want at the end of the year. And you then ask your team to decide which do they want. Whether they want X dollar divided by the number of team members, to, you know, so that everyone's got a buy-in.
But that's what happens anyway. You get given a department budget and crazy targets most of the time, right? You probably can't meet them. That's why they call stretch targets.
Well, yeah, there's always going to be a bit of a debate, but I would rather have all the teammates decide how big the size of the team is, because if you get it very big, then everybody gets less pay, right?
Yeah, exactly. So again, this is something for the masses to tell us. Big teams or small teams, and why? The WhatsApp is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Two Door Cinema Club with What You Know. Actually, it's rather in our case, What We Don't Know. What We Don't Know won't kill us. I'm Chuang, joined by Xiaoning, and this is the type of morning when we look at the social media and the conversations that people are sending to us on the internet airwaves. Is there such a thing?
WhatsApp. Another word you just made up, Chuang.
Okay, so I asked people earlier, why is it that people are stocking up on toilet paper in Hong Kong and Singapore? And Michelle Kong YW is suggesting that people use toilet paper to put in the mask, to recycle the mask. Is that true?
I don't know, but you're not supposed to do that, right? You're only supposed to use it for a day and then after that throw away. But I've seen some online where they say you can make your own mask if you can't buy any.
But the thing, the mask itself, there's a certain filtration science behind it, right? So N95, for example, it doesn't allow the little bits and bobs to get into your...
bits and
right?
Bobs.
Do you know what I mean, right?
I know what you
There's
mean.
There's a certain particle size or micrometers or whatever, right?
But I see so many other reports that say that masks are actually only good for people who are sick so they don't spread the disease.
So it's not for stopping things from entering your
and
thing.
The best thing is ultimately still washing your hands.
Or don't touch your face.
And not touch your face.
Touching my face.
You were touching your face a minute ago. a roll of course WhatsApped in and he said that I think they stocked up on the toilet rolls to throw in the air to celebrate when we find a vaccine for the virus. But you know the
Cheap confetti.
But the Hong Kong government came out to say please don't stock up on toilet paper because it turns moldy.
Is that right?
Yeah, so you can't keep it indefinitely either.
No, la, not true. La. You know the comfort ones? The ones yes. which are really packed in tight?
Compressed.
Comfort or whatever the
compact.
Brand? Compact. It's yeah. called Compact? I've had it in my storeroom for like literally like months and they're fine.
That's because you bought them in the sale, right, Kosutrang? You bought them when they were like on a massive offer yeah. and being the Penang night, you stocked up, right?
Okay, so since you've outed me, I'm going to out you as well, okay? Can I out you?
No!
because you're so busy and such a diligent worker, your ex-classmates have actually taken it upon themselves to message you on WhatsApp BFM to ask you for a school reunion dinner because they can't reach you otherwise. They said, can you please have lunch with them on a certain day in February? And you can't sleep, you can't plead that you have to wake up early because there's no breakfast grill the next day.
I'm going to kill you later because you're drunk. And yes, I'll have that meeting with them, by the way, since they kindly WhatsApped in.
KY Ho, in response to our remarks on the schools and the international schools whose parents don't want their kids to interact with school kids from China because they can't go back. KY Ho is saying, expensive school environments, understandably every parent wants to protect their child. But this is also another data point that the wealthy can be irrational, selfish and or bigoted.
I actually would say everyone can be irrational, selfish and or bigoted.
You don't have to be rich
to do
that. You
don't have to be rich or poor. And there's another WhatsApp from Elvin. He says about teams, whether the ideal team size. He says, small teams, big teams, too slow.
Wants a small team.
Yeah, because yeah. he says that even daily status updates takes 30 minutes to 1 hour for some big teams.
Yeah, I mean, big companies, they take forever to make decisions. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that is true.
I want to look at the Star newspaper right now, Xiaoning, and point out that the headline is something very apt. It's about mental health problems. I didn't know the scale of it in Malaysia, right? 4.6 million working adults reporting mental health issues in 2018. That's a lot. That's what, 15%? Is my maths correct? But of the population of 31? 15 billion ringgit, or 1% of GDP, wasted due to underlying mental health problems. And mental health problems doesn't mean you're like psycho, right?
No,
like anxiety, stress, depression.
Insomnia.
Insomnia,
quite common.
Right?
Mm. I think it's good that we're talking about it finally and coming out of the bushes, you know, rather than deny, oh no, there's no such thing, you know, everyone's hunky-dory. It's good that we're having a discussion on this. The Malaysian Reserve, of course, they're more business paper. So the headline this morning is Chinese Hong Kong buyers' interest in local property disappears. I don't even think they're coming to this neck of the woods, right?
Because, not yet, lah.
Yeah.
Not yet.
And then there's a discussion on whether a blanket ban of Chinese tourists to Malaysia is unnecessary. That's the other sidebar.
Well, that's of course arguable. Okay, page 6 of the Edge Daily. Good news for people who live in SS2 and the environs. SS2 Mall, as you know, which is the animal, which is like an elephant, but it's white in colour.
Which opened and closed within a year, yeah, right? Yeah.
And then I think it was sold to some Singaporean like developer or something, right? Well, it's going to be reopened, okay? As a healthcare centre.
Okay.
But not the kind you think. It's going to be called Life Care Diagnostics Medical Centre.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So you
which
go
is
there,
a good thing.
You go there and do your medical checkups.
And then you understand how ill or not ill you are.
Okay. The New Straits Times, their cover is Fear Feeding Racism, which is something we talked about.
Which is exactly Sinophobia, right?
Yeah. And that's on page 4. And it says, fear fuels Sinophobia. Exactly that, what you said, Chuang. COVID-19 outbreak causes people to spread fake news, stirring up this xenophobia. I think, yeah, it's. I wonder whether it's getting out of hand in many ways.
I think we haven't even touched the surface yet.
Scary thought.
Okay, 6:56 in the morning. We're going to be coming back after this with the 7 o'clock news bulletin. And then after that, the market hour. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.